What is up, Knoll Nation? It's the guys from Plant the Spear back with you for another episode. Michael, I'm starting to get excited, man. We are officially under 100 days until college football season. It feels like a long way away. Summer is always so slow and it drags on. Of course, you know, summer's a fun time, but we're always in the back of our head dreaming of the fall, and we are getting closer. So now you are under 100 days. We're at 99, depending on when you're watching this on this Friday that we're recording. And even more exciting, Michael, I know for people like of our age group, I'm not going to age us and make us feel old here, even though some people I think is silly who may be a little elder or longer in the tooth than us. But we are only, I think you just said earlier, less than 60 days from the return of NCAA 25. And, you know, I'm going to pre-apologize to all you guys listening out there. Like if we just go off the map for a couple of weeks, this game's going to have me in a chokehold because, man, I'm telling you, I'm still on NCAA 2013, the old hard copy of the disc, that thing is screaming for a day off. So, like, I cannot wait for this. I've been waiting for a long time. We actually just watched the trailer, which is available on YouTube, before we jumped on the show. And, man, I had chill bumps. I'm ready for it. So, how are you, Michael? And I know you're excited for that one, too.
Oh, man, thanks, Jesse, for having me on again. Yeah, oh, dude, I have loved the NCAA games. I was just as heartbroken as anybody in our age range who got to play. I remember after school going to play with one of my good friends and his dad, and all three of us had a dynasty, and we were, you know, playing against each other, or we'd just, like, try to beat each other up and score in the hundreds. And, you know, I was playing with Florida State, trying to make them win. And so I can't wait. As we were watching the trailer, I pre-ordered the game. And so less than 60 days before it's back. And yeah, if you don't see me on this show for a while, it's just because I'm hunkered down in my little room here playing all night, all day.
Yeah, we might just have a live stream of us, like, playing for a while. But, you know, it's funny, man, because, like, I don't know how many of our listeners are into the video games. You know, I'm one of them. We were talking about earlier, like, I'm going to pick, like, the FCS Southeast team and run, like, a 12 national championship dynasty with it. But I feel like as Florida State fans, man, we kind of got robbed, you know, because the NCAA always worked a year ahead. So, like, your NCAA 13 was the 12 team. And so, like, it stopped at 14 after things were really getting going. We kind of got robbed of that. And now, of course, it starts again. Like, how cool would it have been to have 24 if it had came out last year like it was supposed to? And we'd have had Jordan and Keon and all these guys, man. Yes. So it's a little bit of a miss out there. But, you know, I'm just excited to be back. I know, like, you know, like we were talking about earlier, I'm one of them where if I love playing with Florida State, but I hate it at the same time because I cannot, like, in my inner being, let Florida State lose. So I will totally, like, quit with 1 second left in the fourth quarter. So, like, anytime I have a dynasty with Florida State, I'm like 1,000-0 with 50 national champions. So, you know, championships. So I'll usually play with, like, an off-the-wall team. But I think everybody does that. Everybody tries to take, like, New Mexico State to the national championship.
Oh, yeah.
It's just so much fun, man.
My MO has always been find the lowest rated team with the worst, like, ratings, and then build them up through the course of, like, 5 or 6, 7 seasons, get them at least as close enough as possible. Like, all my non-conference games are, like, the top 5 teams. And you try to win. And my hope is that Florida State will hire me. Yeah. So then I could take over. Because usually what has happened previously in the game is that I would play with those other teams. And then after a while, Florida State would kind of decline, you know. And then I would get there and I'd be the savior of the program.
You got to love it, man. I'm excited. I'm probably going to go ahead and grab that deluxe edition.
Yeah.
You know, for the Miami fans watching, I heard they do have a VHS edition for you guys that you can play on Atari, so it's relevant to when you were actually good. You know, so be on the lookout for that. The Atari edition. So So with that being said, Michael, let's get into some football talk here. Look, it's summer. There's not a whole lot going on, but we did just have the ACC meetings wrap up down in Amelia Island, Florida. There was a couple of interesting talking points that came out of that. Not anything, like, they weren't flipping tables and, you know, stuff like you might expect. I mean, I kind of heard otherwise, but, man, you would have thought the tension in there had to be, like, thicker than a 2-day-old bowl of grits or something. You know, I mean, it had to just be the most awkward. I just picture ACC meetings now like an old Western cowboy movie where they're all standing in a circle with guns on each other. Like, no one who's going to shoot each other first. There's no loyalty. No one knows they're doing. Everyone's out for themselves. And so, man, it's super interesting because there's so many different angles when you look at the ACC, the meetings and stuff. Like, on the one hand, you have the conference who's, I mean, look, man, Jim Phillips makes a good salary. He knows what he signed up for. But in a way, and I don't feel sorry for him, like, because because of the job that he's done or has not done, really. I just kind of feel bad for him as a person in a way, because it's kind of like he got promoted to captain the Titanic after you hit the iceberg. Like, there's only so much
analogy.
You know what I mean? Like, it was already a sinking ship, and now you just have to try and save it. And it's like his job is just almost nearly impossible.
Right.
But I don't think he's helped himself either.
No.
And so I think you had him kind of trying to hold everything together and keep a positive perception of the conference. Meanwhile, you have, you know, these guys are professionals, man. Right. These are suits and ties. They make good salaries. They're not going to go in there, you know, and like fighting at your sister cousin's house. Like, they're not going to be doing that. We're not getting the cops called here. They're going to be professional.
Right.
But, you know, you can tell it's just got to be an awkward time, man. You got Clemson and Florida State suing to get out, the ACC suing them, and you got some UNC drama that's popping off during the meetings. And so we're going to jump into that. But, man, give me some overall thoughts on some of the stuff that you saw come out of there.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think, man, what a perfect analogy of being promoted to the captain after the Titanic hit the iceberg. It's like, hey, the ship is yours. And you're like, oh, great. Now you have to figure out how to stop the water from taking the ship down, because I mean, that's really what Jim Phelps' jobs is right now, is how does he keep the ACC relevant and afloat in the midst of this changing dynamic of the college football landscape. And he even said that, you know, there's a quote out there. He talks about how, you know, this is going to be a new dynamic, whether they want it or not. And so they're going to have to try to figure out how to embrace it. And, you know, I don't know if I don't, you're kinder than I am, because I don't feel bad for the guy whatsoever, because he has not done himself any favors. You know, he talked about how the thing for me, I'll throw it back to you on this. The thing for me that kind of just forever made me just not like this dude is the fact that we literally watched a whole day of broadcast during the conference championships with Greg Sankey from the SEC, who's his counterpart, literally petitioning for why Alabama and Georgia should be in the college football playoff. And you know where Jim Phillips was? Some radio show.
Right. 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 I mean, you have the ACC network. Like, why? How come it wasn't, you know, like a State of the Union address or something? Correct. Where it's just him at a podium. Like, man, you should be on like a hunger strike or something until they put Florida State in the playoffs.
Exactly. Like, you should have been begging ESPN, just like the SEC was, to get airtime, to state for why Florida State deserved to be in the top four playoff selection. But you weren't. And look what happened to your conference, your team. And now, I mean, I know we'll get into this later, but you look at some of the quotes that came out of there, just mind baffling of, like, you know, what he said. You're just like, are you kidding me? This is what we're paying you for? And so that's why I just have no kindness in my heart, at least for him as the commissioner. You know, I just don't think he's doing a good enough job.
Right. I don't know that I'm going to mail him like a get well soon card,
a
or
Christmas
something
card.
Like that. Right. But I definitely feel like I just understand the challenge that he's facing. And I know that it's an extremely uphill battle that he didn't necessarily create the mess.
Right.
He just didn't do himself any favors, like you said, with that thing. And really, one of the big narratives that came out of the ACC meetings, which we can dive into right now, is the perception of the conference. And I think a lot of that has to do with starting by looking at the leadership. I mean, one, you have a long timeline of failed issues with the leadership
over
of the conference.
And over again.
But then you brought in Jim Phillips, and it was like, oh man, this guy's highly regarded. He was like number
Came
two in
the
line.
Big for Ten.
The, he was in line to be the Big Ten commissioner or something, you know, down the line. And so you thought he might be the guy that could dust this thing off and turn it around. And then it turns out that, again, like, in his very first ACC media days, where I got to go to that, and it was just the whole gated communities speech. And it was like, it was just, man, you can see through everything he's saying. It's like he knows the writing's on the wall, but you have to pretend that it's not.
Right.
And when you look at the perception, a lot of that has to do with, like we said, the leadership starting there. Like you mentioned, he should have been all over national news. You are partners with ESPN. You should have been in a boardroom twisting somebody's arm at ESPN to be on the air, to stick up for your team. And it just seems like a lot of the stuff that he said now, it's like, man, that's, I mean, it's great that you're saying it now, but it doesn't do us any good now.
No, it's too late.
Right. And you have to understand that, like, there was no lawsuit going on at that time. I know they thought it was going to happen. That's why they sued us first. But, like, there's no reason you shouldn't be sticking up for Florida State, because when one of those schools does good, it's good for the entire perception of the conference.
Correct.
And you know, I honestly feel like in our strength of schedule episode that we did here on this channel, we probably did a better job defending the ACC than the ACC did defending itself. You know, we've seen consistent lacks in their marketing, the way the ACC is marketed, the way they promote themselves. You know, I mean, I love Eric McClain and I love EJ and I love some of the guys on the ACC Live and all. I think they do a really great job. Yep. It's just the promotion of the conference, it just doesn't. It doesn't do it justice. It's not on a power three level. Correct. If you're trying to compete with that. And, you know, I was talking to somebody the other day, a friend of mine who's a Clemson fan, and you know, he's pretty tied in with the program and everything. And we were talking about, you know, hey, what conference do you think we're going to end up in? You know, either one of us. And you know, we got to talking about it. And he was saying how, like, some of the schools, he kind of felt a little bad for the ones that are going to get left behind. And I said, man, I don't.
Nope.
I don't, because they made their bed and now they have to lay in it. And, you know, when you look at Clemson and Florida State, they stand out far above the rest. I mean, there is no other team that even remotely matches the success that they've had on the field, at least in the ACC. All of Miami's was prior to being in the ACC. They have contributed nothing to this conference. It's been a two-team conference since Florida State joined.
Correct.
And, you know, and I'll kick it back to you on this, but here's why I don't feel bad for them. Because we all got the same paycheck. You know, it changed last year with some performance enhanced payouts, but we all got the same paycheck. And so I went back and I looked at a couple of numbers here. And, you know, first off, you have to consider that some schools are private, so they don't disclose
the numbers.
Right. Yeah. They don't disclose all their numbers. But I did go back and look some things up. And man, again, this just goes to speak to that. Now, this is from the Knight Newhouse. I want to make sure I from the Knight Foundation Project. So if these numbers are crazy, go yell at them. This is where I got the data from. But anyway, they have a tab where you can break it down and you can see football spending, what you spent on football. And they show from 2018 to 2023. So they give you that kind of five-year average. Clemson, over that 5 years, on average, spent $52.63 million on their football program. That's like scholarships and everything.
Right.
Florida State spent $53.1 million, and the ACC average was $30.1
million. Wow.
And like just some of the schools, I didn't have time to pull everybody, but Georgia Tech averaged $26.1 million. Wow. Louisville, who, again, you think is one of the better brands in the ACC, averaged $32.1 million. And, you know, the ACC blue blood themselves, UNC, averaged $29.1 million. Again, man, like, you are a product of your own creation. You had the same paycheck. You could have spent the money on the football program to be successful like Florida State and Clemson did, and you didn't. So I don't feel bad if you could get left behind. The free lunch is gone, man. So I'll go back to you on those numbers. But, man, when I started looking at things, I was like, that's why I don't feel bad for them. Because, I mean, you're looking at an average of over $20 million a year more put into the football budget than these other schools.
And they had no problem. They had no problem for the longest of time, basically riding on the backs of Florida State, as Florida State was earning them all that money. Let's just be real. The ACC wasn't like a dominant football conference before Florida State.
Right.
They were not. I mean, they had one national title, and that's a split national title with Georgia Tech in 91 with Colorado, I believe. That's it.
Yeah. And then they had Clemson won one in 1980.
Even if they even count that one, right?
Back when they had leather helmets.
Yeah, back when they had leather helmets, and they had different polls awarding national championships back then. So, so when Florida State gets to the ACC, it's a basketball conference. It's purely basketball. Florida State gets there and turns it into a football recognition. Like, oh, you've got to deal with the ACC because you got to deal with Florida State, not anybody else. And so the ACC was more than happy to ride the coattails of Florida State getting all the money, all the things. Then the moment that Florida State says, hey, this is not fair, we've been carrying this conference on our backs for all this time and we're getting the same amount of equal pay, they all want to throw up in arms, and Wake Forest wants to say, we're the hottest new brand and rising in sports. Are you kidding me? Look how much you're spending on football. Look how much UNC, the blue blood of the ACC, is spending on football. Look how much, you know, the only person, only team program that we can even say like is with us is Clemson, and they're our rivals. And that makes sense. They're our rivals because they're actually spending the money to solidify their football program. So this is the ACC's fault. It is the ACC's fault that the world perceives the ACC as it is. It's not Florida State's fault. It's the ACC's fault. It's not Clemson's fault. It's the ACC's fault. You talk about advertising. You talk about Jim Phillips. I mean, he's over here talking about, you know, at the ACC meetings, he said, you know, one of the things he said was, you know, I negotiated hard. I felt like I negotiated hard, but because of the metrics, we just did not do well in the metrics. You know why we didn't do well in the metrics, Jim Phillips? Is because instead of like the SEC and the Big Ten, who's always promoting their football programs and promoting their football dynasties and promoting their football things, you're over here talking about women's lacrosse or talking and not that I have anything against women's lacrosse, but I'm just saying.
Right.
You're over here talking about the other sports that is not making money. I'm not saying that those sports aren't important. I'm not saying that those other conferences don't promote those sports. But you know what they do focus on a lot? You know what all their money is really built around that gets to support those other sports? Football. Right. Football.
And, you know, the sad thing about it, too, is you've seen the blueprint laid. Like, you saw what the SEC did for that conference by football. Like, the SEC has not always been what the SEC is in its current form. You know, ESPN invested a lot of money and they got fortunate with as much as he might be the Darth Vader of college football, Greg Sankey is really, really good at his job.
Yeah.
And then the Big Ten has kind of followed suit with being like, put the conference on football's back and then build everything off of that. And the ACC kind of chose to stay that basketball conference. And again, like you mentioned, man, it's not even about the success on the field because that's not what brings the revenue. The TV numbers bring the revenue.
Yes.
And if you thought that the spending gap was wide, go look at the TV numbers. Yes. I mean, it is insane how far Clemson and Florida State are ahead of these other teams. Now, there was a couple teams that did better last year, but I remember the numbers off the top of my head because I wrote an article on it, and I think it was 2022, even when Florida State was just getting back to a 10-win season. You know, them and Clemson were in the top 20, and the next closest was NC State at 43rd with under a million average viewers per week. And so it's like you just don't bring the numbers. And to me, you should have been forcing these schools to say, look, you have to put money into this football, your football program if you want to survive. And what kills me, man, is when you see so many of these schools come out and criticize Florida State for what they did. How many of these schools went to bat for Florida State when they got snubbed? You know, I think Dabo might have said something about, about how he didn't think it was fair, but you really didn't hear anything from many other coaches. And so it's like, man, you didn't go to bat for us. So, but now you want to come out and say stuff about it.
Yep.
And, you know, the people who think that, well, Florida State's just crying about it. Man, if it had been your team.
Oh, you'd have done the same thing.
They'd have done the same thing because it's never happened to anybody else. And so I think what's interesting to tie this into some of the stuff that came out of these ACC meetings was, and I'll read a little quote from Michael Alford. He said, you know, we have great partnerships in this conference, great relationships, which I thought was a little kind of a weird statement. You know, it was kind of like a let's be nice. I'm in the same building.
Yes.
He said, but at the end of the day, we've got to do what's best for Florida State and looking at the changing environment of college athletics and make sure we're there to be successful. Clemson and FSU are two institutions that want success and see a changing environment and want programs to compete at the very top level. They understand to compete at the top level, we need to have our options available and want their programs to compete at an elite national level. And to me, the thing that I think I take away from that quote is people have a misconception that Florida State came at this to just dunk on the ACC. Like, it's a trash conference. Mm-hmm. It was never about that. It was never about the ACC being bad. If they could have figured out a way to fix this, I don't think Florida State had a problem staying in the ACC before. I think now it's the damage is irreparable. But it was always about what's best for us. And then Clemson sees the same thing. They said, well, you know, I mean, there are, like you said, there are direct conference rival because of we're at the same level. You know, we're at the same pecking order.
Right.
And now they realize too, like, hey, man, you know, we actually want to compete on a national level. We got to get out of here. And we've talked about this before. There are two teams. And I mean, I know Miami wants to compete at this level, until they put their money where their mouth is, so to speak. And I know they've increased some spending lately and stuff like that. It still is the two teams ahead of the rest. And so it's like, man, when you look at these two, it's like they compete for national championships. They compete against SEC competition every single year.
Every year.
These other schools, they don't do that. They don't go out of their way to schedule a lot of these hard out-of-conference games. No. You know, they don't play against SEC teams as their main rivals. They don't have to compete with a lot of those
schools. They don't even have a national brand like these two schools do.
Right. And so I think it's like you have to look at it from what's best for them. It's not, you know, again, man, it's like if someone offered you a job, you know, if you worked at Walmart and Target offered you $10 more an hour, you're not going to be like, well, you know, I've worked here for a while. I kind of like my manager and whatnot. It's best for what's your household and your family. And that's what they're trying to do. And I think that's why you're seeing the drama that happened at UNC, which is what we'll talk about next, where they had a board of trustees member, not the entire board. It's just one guy. So we don't know their entire feelings on it.
Right.
But he comes out and he basically says, look, man, we're you know, crunching our numbers and we're coming in at a $17 million deficit in 2024 for this upcoming season. And, you know, we heard them, what, a couple months, maybe a year ago, come out and say that, look, if things don't change, we can't necessarily support all these sports because they have a lot of sports. They have a lot you know, Olympic Title IX sports and things like that. And it's going to come to a point where a lot of these schools are starting now to realize, like, man, this is I don't maybe necessarily agree with what Florida State did, but I understand why they did it. And that's why I think, like, the ACC is going to fight you tooth and nail. I mean, they're going to. This is a fight for survival for them, because even if the conference doesn't die, it's not going to be the same with Florida State and Clemson. ESPN may not even pick up that option.
That's right.
But I think you're seeing the teams that do compete or at least want to compete at that national level, they know why Florida State. And that's why you're seeing what's come out of North Carolina. And I mean, that's a hot mess, man. At least we're aligned. You know, you got the board of trustees say one thing, the AD says
AD
another,
thing, the president telling both of them to shut their faces.
I mean, it sounds like Bubba Cunningham might be showing the door pretty soon. I mean, they're digging into that man's, you know, past and stuff to see how he managed the athletic department. But you know, he was pro ACC, so I think he started, you know, you kind of went against what's good for North Carolina. And that's what I just don't understand, is why some of these schools are so pro ACC. The ones that could go somewhere else. Wake Forest, I get it, man. You're not going anywhere. You're not getting an invite.
Right.
But these other schools that could go somewhere else and end up in a better situation.
Yeah.
It's a dereliction of duty not to do what's best for the university.
Use that word. Yes.
That was a little bit of a big one, man.
That was a big word.
That's a dollar word.
The dereliction of duty. I mean, I think it's the perfect word, because you look at UNC, we've known for, I mean, you know, Jesse, you and I are in our 30s, and we've known most of our life that the SEC would murder somebody to get UNC into their background, right? And so how can you, as the board, as the AD, as the president, not look at this current landscape of college football and say, man, we have a surefire ticket. We have a wink, wink, and a nod from the SEC that if we were ever to leave this conference, we could go and make the SEC money and continue to be North Carolina, and, you know, the Jordan school, all like that stuff. And yet we're over here waving the ACC flag. Like, we've got to stick with this thing. The house is burning down. And so do you stay in the burning house, or do you look at the neighbor's house and say, no, I'm going to go over there. That looks better than my house right now. Right. Like, what are we doing here? And here's the other thing. This is why I think it's interesting, is the fact that, you know, Florida State, People jumped down Florida State and got on Florida State because of they publicized the board of trustees meeting where they had to vote for the lawsuit, you know, and in that meeting they said some things. Well, because they're required by Sunshine State laws to publicize that meeting. Now, UNC didn't have to publicize anything, and you got a rogue board member out there putting quotes out there, you know, like, you know, as they say, dropping G's like lasagna on these guys. Like, I mean, he's just dropping bars on his own university. Then you got the AD that's aloof, that's not figuring out. And then you got the ACC commissioners like, yeah, I'm not going to get in the middle of it. I'm going to let them work it out. The ACC, let's go, baby.
Right, man. Like I said, at least we're aligned. At least Clemson is aligned. UNC seems like they just don't really know what they want to do, but they know. I think it's the fact that it's like they know they can't stay in the ACC, but they also know they are like the first domino.
Yeah.
You know, Florida State and Clemson are kind of like
big ones.
They're like the pillars that hold up the conference. But man, if you lose a blue blood,
like UNC, because
Clemson is a blue blood. I mean, they've been around since the beginning. They've been a member since, I think, 53 or whenever it started. If you lose UNC, man, this conference is in deep trouble. And, you know, there's some people out there that I see through social media and whatnot, you know, that represent other brands and podcasts and stuff. And they're pro ACC, but you look at the school that they represent, and it's like, I know why you represent the ACC. Correct. I know why you like the ACC, because you don't have the same thing. And people can talk about where they'll go. I don't think you're going to have these teams doing this
That's right.
without having some kind of backdoor handshake agreement to know they have somewhere to go. Now, I mean, the thing is, man, like, even if you lose this thing, because the ACC has said through this, they have zero chance of settling. They are going to fight this to the end, and they have to. I mean, they got no choice. I still think it's going to go to discovery. I still think they're going to go to a settlement, and I still think it's going to get handled outside of the court. I don't think the court's going to end up deciding this. I think it might drag out longer than we anticipate.
Yeah.
Just because you're going to end up getting, you know, if UNC does file, now you got, because you know they're going to sue back, that's right. Going to be six lawsuits happening at one time. But, man,
that's a lot of fronts to be fighting a war.
That's a lot of money to be hemorrhaging for legal fees. And the thing is, like, what's interesting is this is kind of one where it's just like prolonging the inevitable, because you know when 2036 hits, I mean, Lord knows what college football will look like by then. Goodness gracious, it might not even be the same period. Jeez. We might even have college football by then. It could be semi-pro, who knows?
Yeah.
But you know everybody's going to leave in 2036. They're just going to kind of blow the whole thing up and walk away. So, man, it's been interesting to watch the developments come out of here. But, you know, there really wasn't any, like, smoking guns. So some of the other things that I want to touch on coming out of that is a couple of the comments that Mike Norvell made talking about the roster. Because we got, you know, they had the ACC media or channel there or whatever, ACC Network, and they got to talk to him. And some of the things that I'm encouraged about looking at 2024, man, Mike Norvell, for one, is really excited about this 2024 roster. And, you know, he's not one to really he doesn't really give you that insight. Like,
he doesn't show you his hands.
Right. I think a lot of times with Mike Norvell, it's more about what he doesn't say or what he's like. He'll be talking about someone. He'll be like, you know, and I think this guy, I'm excited about it. He don't want to say it, but you can tell usually by his body language when he's excited about something. And I think he knows he's got a good team.
Yeah.
I love that he says, look, these guys don't need any motivation, because they kept asking about, you know, how they're going to respond to what happened last year. These guys, they don't need any motivation. And then another interesting comment that came out was his comments on Darius Washington.
Yeah.
Thinking that he can be an All-American level left tackle. Now, he was first team All-ACC last year. So, I mean, he's played at a high level. But he's also kind of been that Swiss Army knife. Like, he's been guard, center, tackle, everywhere. So, I think if you can – that's just two things. One, if you could put him in that position and just let him play one position. You know, that's got to help.
Yep.
But – man, it would be so big for Florida State to have an All-American type of left tackle. Mm-hmm. At the same time, Michael, that says something about the guy who was previously Jesse? In that spot. And, you know, we were talking about this before the show, and we talked about this before. Like, man, it's nothing against Robert Scott, but he's proven to not be reliable as far as health reasons. And so I think you hate to see him get passed up.
Yeah.
Maybe he can look at right tackle or something like that. But, man, I think this is a smart move to put him in that position, lock him in, and then, you know, give him that vote of confidence that you believe in him as a coach, and to just let him go flourish with a guy that you can rely on, because he's been reliable, knock on wood. Yeah. And then you can bring in Robert Scott if need be. So I think that's a good move, man. I'm excited to see what Darius can do. I think this is going to be a really big year for him. Again, first-team All-ACC performer last year at tackle as an offensive tackle. Man, if you could have a just jam-up left tackle, man, that's going to be big for protecting DJU.
Absolutely. I don't know what his PFF grade was last year, but, yeah, to be All-ACC at tackle, I mean, he was a Swiss Army knife. You could put him at pretty much any position, and while he may not have been elite at every single position, he was serviceable, he was reliable. And if Mike Norvell at this point of the offseason is saying this guy again, and I meant to say that he doesn't show you his cards, not his hands, he doesn't show you his cards. If Mike Norvell is saying this now, that tells you something, because he gives you very little hints about how he, you know, he'll say he's excited about somebody, he'll say somebody will be a great player. He rarely ever says this player is going to be this great at this position, right? That tells you that they're giddy about what Darius Washington can be for them at the left tackle. And when you have a right-handed quarterback, that left tackle is one of the most important positions on the offensive line to make sure you're blocking his blind side well. And so that's exciting. Now, on the other side of that, it is what it is about Robert Scott. And listen, we love Robert Scott, man. We're big fans of Robert Scott. We've always had great hope in him that every time he gets on the field, you think this is going to be it. This is when he's going to put it all together. But as you said, Jesse, there's just He's not reliable health-wise. He's not consistently healthy, and that's a problem. And Mike Norvell and Alex Atkins' job is not to – this sounds terrible – hold your hand through this.
Yeah.
Their job is to win football games, and at some point, they're going to have to recruit over you because – or develop over you because you're not consistent. And I get it. Health is something you sometimes you can't control.
Right.
And that's unfortunate. But it's also something else Mike Norvell and them can't control. And so they can only do what they can do in front of them, which is, well, we're going to go ahead and develop Darius here. And Robert, if you come along, then great. We'll figure it out. But if not, then we got to have a plan. So it's unfortunate, but it is what it is.
But man, when you think about it, if you get Darius at your left tackle and then you have probably TJ Ferguson at one of your guard spots, Richie Leonard at one of your guard spots.
Got Smith
and
at
then
center.
You got Maury Smith at center and probably Byers at your other tackle who now has a year of Power 5 experience.
That's right.
Man, I think this offensive line is going to be – they're going to be good, man. I'm excited. I think you're going to see this – like I said, I firmly believe this team is going to get back to running the ball the way they were, especially with that deep stable of backs. So, man, I'm excited about it. Darius is a really good player. I was excited to see him come back. And so, man, it's just, you know, as you get closer, you start to look at the areas where you can be excited. And, you know, again, like we talked about with the portal before, it wasn't the most fruitful season, but you're beginning to get to where you like the guys that you have. Right. And, you know, it's funny because talking about the portal, you know, some of the interesting comments, speaking of the ACC meetings, was where like Dabo's like, well, we didn't see anybody, you know, they're not good enough. Transfers aren't good enough to play for us. And that's why, you know, we didn't take any, which is like, I mean, first off, are you freaking clueless, man? Like, look at last year. You don't think Keon Coleman would have helped that offense? I mean,
you don't think he wanted Jared Verse on that defensive line? Come on, man.
What a dumb thing to say. And then, like, I don't know if you planned on taking transfers in the future. Good luck with that now. But I think the interesting thing about Clemson's approach is the fact that, like, you know, it's like trying to carry a bucket of water with a hole in it. Like, you have to replenish that water as it leaks out because they have people leave. I mean, they do. Bo Collins hit the portal. I think it was Nate Wiggins hit the portal. You know, you had a lot of guys hit the portal that left Clemson, and you can only bring in so many high school guys a year.
Right.
So, you know, you just look at the way they were last year, and it's like, man, transfers could have really helped you.
They did get transfers. They did.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that. They signed a whole team of transfers
out of high school because, you know, Dabble said that if they're in high school and they go to college, that's transferring.
This guy just comes up with, I swear, man, he just must make things up on the fly. It's just so funny. Now, I will defend Dabo for 2 seconds. He's not completely wrong. Like, there has still never been a team that has really, like, I don't think Michigan was not transfer heavy. I'm sure they had some transfers that helped them, but. The method to get a national championship is still recruit and develop at a high school. Until it's not. So he's not wrong there. I just think being so antiquated in the way that you think about the portal is ridiculous because, you know, teams like Mike Norvell and Florida State have shown you the blueprint, and now you're seeing a lot of teams follow that lead. And so, man, it's crazy.
Now, Jesse, I could say to that point, you're right. There has not been a team that has been transfer heavy to win a national title. But I could also throw a wrench in that point to say, well, there could have been one.
There should have been one. Yeah. There should have been one. You know, there should have been one. But you know what, Michael? You know who will never screw you over?
Who?
That's Alumni Hall FSU.
You can trust them.
You can trust them to handle all your Florida State gear needs. So go check those guys out. They are today's sponsor. If you're in Tallahassee, go check them out at 1415 Timber Lane Road or shop online, alumnihall.com. Navigate over to the FSU page. They got all kinds of cool stuff, something for every single Noll fan, and you can get it at a great price by using code SPEAR to get 10% off online or in-store. Just tell them we sent you. We appreciate you guys supporting those that support us. That's Alumni Hall FSU. Michael, the meetings are cool, man. That's all hoopla and fun stuff to talk about. But, like, we got to get down to some brass tacks, man. Let's go. Actual football news to talk about here. The first two game times are set. We are on the board. We know what's coming. So, now, Florida State, it's kind of cool. Man, I hate noon games. I'll be honest with you. I don't care if you played on the moon or Ireland or wherever. I hate noon games. But I get with the time zones and things like that. That's what you got to do. But I do think what's cool about the Ireland game against Georgia Tech being at noon, you're literally the first game of the 2024 season. So right. like all eyes are going to be on you. That's why they took this game, because again, first game of the season, probably, you know, the biggest week zero game, you're going to be on international TV. This is why they did it. For those of you, you know, this is an international exposure. It's huge. So that's a noon game. That's going to be cool. I feel like the noon game, I know the time zone things, let's put that aside for a second. I feel like game day's ducking us a little bit, you know,
with
the noon kickoff. Because, you know, normally with the noon kickoffs, they usually either stay inside the stadium or they start outside and they go inside. So
that's right.
Maybe it's kind of like, let's do it at noon so we can be in the stadium so we can lock all those guys outside. Because, man, I'm telling you, like, I'm not going to be in Ireland. I wish I could be.
I wish I could.
You know, there's too much stuff falling off planes right now for me to – that's a lot of water to fly over. I ain't trying to do with that. I don't swim that good. But, man, I hope game day packs some extra, like, of those nets they put behind them. Because, man, you know, I think Florida State fans are going to be finding anything and everything to kind of throw at Kirk Herbstreit and that crew.
I really think, well, okay, so first of all, yeah, the noon game is you know, whatever, noon for us. But it's actually going to be like 5 o'clock at kickoff there. So it'll feel much later for them, for the Florida State football team and Georgia Tech for them than it is for us at noon. I do think, and I will say this too, sometimes I dream about what I would do if I could have a private moment with Kurt Herbstreit or Reese Davis or any of those guys, I would hope, and I think, because Florida State fans are some of the classiest fans out there, I think they're going to boo, and they have every right to boo if they get a chance to boo. I think they're going to jeer, and they have every right to jeer if they get a chance to jeer. I don't think they're going to be completely disrespectful or anything like that. And we here at Plant the Spirit encourage you not to be that way if you get the opportunity. But boo. Boo loudly.
Yeah.
Remind them of how badly they screwed Florida State. And I hope Florida State just – I really hope that this is like, you know, what did they say? The Mike's era evil tour or whatever it's called.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. But, you know, I think they were actually kind of smart by doing the Ireland game because, you talk about the how we're a classy fan base. Now, you know what I mean. Like, we'll pop off the Gucci sweater and throw them hands a little bit. So I think that they did the Ireland one because they're like, listen, guys, there ain't no chance in hell we're going to Tallahassee this season because you will see the other branch of the Florida State fans. You know, we all have like that drunk cousin, you know, that's right. That's most of the SEC fan bases that you don't invite to all the family functions. Nope. You show up to Tallahassee, it's going to be a long day for game day.
You're getting some. I'm going to just tell you right now, you come up, you're getting some.
For sure. So this is probably like them checking, let's give them a game day so we don't have to go to anywhere near Tallahassee this year. But, man, I think it's true. They have every right to be pissed because of what they did. And personally, I think it's I'm trying to think of a family-friendly way to say this, but just a screwed-up thing to even go to this. Like,
why?
You're putting salt in the wound. You knew what you were doing when you agreed to do this. So, man, it's actually pretty ridiculous that they're even there in the first place. But with that being said, the next game against BC also – now, we expected this because it's a Labor Day game. It's on Monday. They took this so they could get the nighttime slot. It is at 7:30, as expected. So, nighttime in whatever Doak Campbell's going to look like. You know, we just did our season ticket picking the other day, I'm going to have to get some binoculars because we're going to be, I think I see somebody. It's way up, man. It's slim pickings. There is not a whole lot. It's going to be rough this year. But that one's.
I would say, like, yes, the stadium is going to be what it is, and that's unfortunate. But, man, what a kick that's going to be at 7:30 on Labor Day.
It's going to be crazy, man. It'll be fun. That's going to be a really fun environment. Even if it is BC, I think that's it's going to be a fun game though, man. 7:30.
Remember last time we played them 7:30 at night? Kickoff.
And this is going to be their first game of the season too. So you'll have already had a game to get in the swing of things. You know, they're dealing with a coaching change too.
That's right.
So that's going to be, it's going to be fun, man. You got a night game coming up and then the international game. So that's going to be cool. So Michael, just now that we're talking about football, let's just kind of talk about some of these week one matchups that we're excited about. Because look, I mean, I'm going to say 93% Florida State. And I like using 93 and 99 for obvious reasons.
Yep.
We like to talk about kind of everything college football here. So we're going to branch out just a little bit, talk about some of these games. You know, there is a Thursday game now, and this one I think is interesting. Maybe not on the radar for a lot of people. North Dakota State at Colorado.
Mm.
Man, look, North Dakota State ain't no joke. They might pants Deion on national TV.
I was thinking the same thing.
Gonna be rough. That ain't Colorado State, buddy. They have a history of beating.
They win
FBS teams.
FBS teams. They win titles. They're good in their division. They're in the playoffs every year. And yeah, Deion, if you take this for granted, you're gonna be on the embarrassing side of this.
Yeah, I think that one's gonna be interesting. And you know, man,
that's why Amarion Cooper came back to Florida State.
He knew. He's like, I ain't starting off like that. Not me, buddy. He's like, I'm going to be in Ireland drinking a Guinness watching y'all get blew up.
That's right.
That's so good. Yeah, man. So, I mean, I think it's interesting. And I've always said this, man. Like, I love Florida State. I love big games. I will sit down and watch two community colleges play on a Thursday night.
Oh, yes.
So, like, I'm interested to see these. But when you get to the headliner games of that Saturday, now, these aren't the week zero games. These are the week ones. But August 31st, Clemson versus Georgia in Atlanta. This is a really interesting game. Man, it's a little bit disappointing that they're starting at noon, on a variable time. But I think this is going to be a really, really interesting game because I know we were talking before the show. I know how we both expect it to go. I mean, you look at this is really a bad timing for Clemson. Yes. Like now, if you win, I mean,
this is great.
This is great. Like this is great for we are back on the top of the mountain, but. You got blown out by Duke last year in your first game of the season. And look at how it set the tone for that season.
Yep.
The narrative was written on Clemson before they even played another game.
Right.
And so if you come into this Georgia game, who, you know, they brought back a lot of their guys. They got an advantage. Carson Beck has shown to be better than Cade Klubnik so far. I mean, it's year two in that offense, so maybe they've gotten a little bit better. Man, I think Georgia's gonna put a whooping on Clemson, and man, like this is one where I had wrote an article for the College Huddle that we're in, and I wrote an article about five games where the ACC could earn some respect this season, and this is one of them.
If Clemson can
go into Atlanta and pull this off, it would be massive for the conference, for them, for everybody. I just don't think it's gonna happen.
No, I mean, you got first of all, like what a home field advantage for Georgia. They play in the Mercedes-Benz Dome for a lot of things. Like this is their backyard, and you're coming in to try to beat them when they have all these returning players, including Carson Beck coming back, right? Who could have left? I mean, yes, they're gonna be replacing Brock Bowers, but. They'll figure it out. It's Georgia. Look at
There's not much else they're replacing. And I will say they are really good in Atlanta, unless it's against Nick Saban.
Other than that, you're in trouble. That's very true. And I hate to bring up a sore subject, but if you looked at what happened at the Orange Bowl,
the unnamed game that
we dreamt, I think, but you saw the level of talent that was showing up in that game. And Clemson, I know Dabble's just now embracing the transfer portal, high school, whatever he thinks it is. But what you saw of Clemson last year was, they got better towards the end of the year. I think they ended up going like 8-4, whatever, beating Kentucky in the whatever Music City Bowl. But they were nowhere on the level of what we saw at the Orange Bowl with Georgia. And so. This would be great if Clemson could win, but you're not going in there betting them at all.
No.
This might be a first quarter game, and that's about it.
Yeah, and man, I really think, too, for this one. Now, it's kind of an unreal standard to hold yourself to, like if you're not there. But when you look at it from Clemson's standpoint, you're trying to lobby to get out of the ACC because you want to go compete with all these. We don't need transfers. We like the guys we got. You've won a couple national championships. You've been in the playoffs consistently. You should be able to line it up and compete with Georgia you look at it from like a blue chip ratio. So like, man, I think this one is where you could really, really reignite the flames in Clemson if you win this game. But if you lose this game, I think you're going to start to have some eyes really start to put the pressure on Dabo because if they screw around and lose in Tallahassee too, and then maybe drop another game here or there, another three loss season or something like that. It's just going to look like, you can't compete at that level anymore.
So
this one's going to be big for Clemson, for the ACC, and just to see how that season plays out. Because, I mean, if you come out and you get whooped, it ain't going to be like the Orange Bowl, I doubt.
But if
it's even like last year, a three-touchdown beating like they did to friggin' Duke, that's going to be interesting, man. But
Well, and I'll say this too real quick is that, you know, you look at Bama and Georgia because they've been the torchbearers for college football for the last several years. You know, when they've had off seasons, you know, Georgia obviously recently has, you know, come on to be the elite standard over the last three seasons. You know, they lost for the first time last year to Alabama. But, you know, you look at, you know, when with Nick Saban, when Alabama had an off season, immediately the next season, they were like in the conversation again,
right?
And
right.
They were winning and they were playing for a national championship. Whereas with Dabo now, what is this? This is year three or four that they've been kind of removed in the sense from the national spotlight esque and that say. And so you're now getting into that territory where you're like, and I hate to do it because I love the man so much, but man, you're kind of getting that territory where you're looking at like the first 5 years of the lost decade of Bobby Bowden, right. Where it's like they were kind of in the conversation, but you knew round about where they got to 5-0, 6-0. This is where they start to like falter. Well, right. Clemson is Dabble is starting to get in that same era.
Yeah.
And the difference between him and Nick Saban was Nick Saban could make it a 1 year thing and then get him right back on the horse the next year. Right.
And it didn't matter. Like it didn't matter the change, the quarterback, the coordinators. It didn't matter. And I actually think that's a really good comparison that you made because you look at, you know, Bowden and Dabo for a sense, like Dabo's has not been as far removed from success yet. Both of them got or will get a long runway from their success, from winning multiple national titles. But the downfall kind of came in the same way where like you were successful and then a coordinator change happened.
That's right.
You know, Mark Richt moved on. You hired Jake Bowden. He hired
terrible hire.
He made a bad hire with Streeter.
Yeah.
Only last, I think, a year. Now you bring in O'Reilly and just really didn't pan out too well last year. I mean, obviously it was year one, so maybe things get better for him. But at the same time, man, it's like they're slipping.
That's right.
And it's will they ever be able to get back? Or did you just kind of have the magic sauce with the coordinators that you had and now you never get back there? And unfortunately, like Bowden was never able to get back there. Nope. And so you had to make a change. And so you just wonder what that runway is. But I think Dabo also made a good point, you know, when he had his blowout with Tyler from Spartanburg. where it was like, I think they're a little bit spoiled, you know.
Yeah, for sure.
Clemson went 40 years with just being mid for a long time. But man, I just think if you come out and you get clapped by Georgia in week one, it's really going to start for
pressure
people
builds.
To realize. Right. Yeah. Because once you compete on that elite level, if you can't do it anymore, people are going to be like, look, man, what are we doing? I mean, you just got to be careful you don't become Nebraska, where they fired Bo Pelini for winning like 9-10 games every year. And now they would kill for a 10-win season.
Yeah.
You know, but looking at the next big one, and this is like, man, I just wish, I don't know. I wish this game could like get canceled. They both lose, whatever. it ends
double
in a,
L's.
Right. Yes. Like it ends in a tie or something like that. And both teams have to forfeit. I don't know. However it happens, let's just make it happen. But that's Miami at Florida. Oof. And this is a game that I'm going to be really interested to watch. I wish they played more often. I wish they played every year.
Every year.
You know, so you could have like a true state champion every single year. I would love to see that happen. And I think this is going to be an interesting one, man. I just feel like the swamp is an advantage for them. You know, Miami doesn't get to play in that type of environment very often.
3:32. Yeah.
I don't know how much hype there's going to be, you know, with a kind of a lame duck coach situation and stuff like that. But, you know, Florida's not like they got some pieces. I think Miami's probably a better team. I just think like, I'm not sold on Cristobal, man. I'm just like, I don't think Napier's a bad coach. I just think he's in over his head at Florida.
Yeah.
I just think Miami is just, it's like, you know, again, like we always talk about, it's like having a Ferrari with a guy that can't drive, you know, it's just, it's wasting talent. And so, man, it's interesting to see. I think Miami should win this game. I just don't know that they're going to go into the swamp and beat Florida in game one. It would be huge for Florida to win this because you can't find a lot of wins on their schedule. Yeah. And so if you win this, it's going to be huge for them. And I think for Miami, really, I think that this is a put up or shut up year for Mario Cristobal. It's year three. Like you got your guys, you got your quarterback. This is who you wanted. You went out and got him. If you can't put together a 10-win season with that baby soft schedule.
Yes.
I mean, it's, like it's going to be hard to sell the vision, man. It's going to be hard.
Two things for me. Number one, Miami fans have been saying that Cristobal is much better than Mike Norvell. He's proven it differently. He can recruit better. It's year three. Here's where it goes. Okay, let's remind everybody. Okay, let's go ahead and do this. Year three of Mike Norvell at Florida State did what? We went 10-3, right? Okay. So if Cristobal does not at least get 10-3, it's a sham. He's not better than Mike Norvell. He's not better than Mike Norvell if he gets 10-3, but let's just go ahead and play their game quick. Okay. If he doesn't get 10-3, this is the put up and shut up year. All the recruiting, all the great players and the offseason championships they've gotten, this is the year to put it all together. Now, I would normally, like you, give them the advantage as far as on paper, they look like a much better team than the University of Florida. The thing that for me puts Florida on the edge is that this game is being played. This game is being played at Ben Hill Griffin Stadium, right? It's being played at the Swamp. Now, if this game was being played down in Miami where they have their, 100 fans that show up to the game, then maybe I still might give the Florida Gators.
It's basically a neutral site game.
So Miami might win. But because this is being played at the Swamp at 3:30, I just give Florida just a little bit of an edge. And here's the other reason why I give them a little bit of edge. Because they have Graham Mertz coming back, who's going to start. He's familiar with their offense. He's familiar with their play calling and all like that stuff. Whereas on the other side, Cam Ward is still learning the offense. And based on what we heard from the offseason, we didn't hear a lot of glowing reports about how that transition has been going so far. I mean, we didn't hear a lot of negative, but we didn't hear a lot of glowing reports either. So I just think because it's at the Swamp, because it's at 3:30, and because they have a more familiarized offense, I right now at this day, I give Florida just the edge on this.
Yeah, I could see that too, man. It's going to be so interesting. And I will say too, and we'll move on from it, but when you look at what year three in the comparison and all that stuff, I mean, he started in a better situation. He didn't come in a COVID year. They had a more talented roster on paper, blue chip ratio, and all that stuff. The program was in a at least they had a better record on the field when he inherited it. So, like, Mike Norvell has done more with less. And again, man, you just got like this is it, man. If they don't do something this year with that schedule, like that schedule they had last year was soft already. And to end up doing what they did last year, like again, but they got Cam Ward has to stay healthy. I mean, that's all they got, but again, man. Yeah. I don't know, man. I feel like Miami might win it, but I can't buy into Miami until I see it.
Nope,
they have had one 10-win season in 20 years. We sucked. And
we've had more 10-win seasons than them.
Right, like as the kids say, we were cheeks for a few years. And we still have won 10 games, two seasons, twice as many times as Miami has in the last 2 years that they did in the 20. So until I see it, man, I'm just not on that train. Yeah. Now, the other one that's interesting for us because we play them this year, Notre Dame at Texas A&M. That's going to be interesting. Now, Texas A&M, shout out Jimbo, the guys talking about guys who are doing less with more. The best roster, the worst record. I don't know how it happens, but it just does. But, man, you get Elko steps in this year. Yeah, obviously, he's a great coach. What he did at Duke, man. Yep. I think he can get that program turned around. But it's going to be year one. Now, you look at Marcus Freeman. I'm a fan of Marcus Freeman. I think he's a good coach. That's a talented roster. They have some questions at Notre Dame. They got the quarterback that transferred there, Riley Leonard. He was hurt, so I don't know if he's even going to be ready for week one. This is going to be interesting because we need to see what Notre Dame's going to be. They should go in there, and I know that's a tough environment, the cult that they have out there in Texas. God, that's such a weird – imagine being a fan of that school. Jeez, please. But anyway, that's just strange, man.
But so you know what's kind of nice, though, Jesse, just real quick before you give the analysis there? What's kind of nice is that we don't have to, like, hate them anymore because Jimbo's not there. Like, we can actually be like, okay, they're weird, whatever. But before it was like, oh, they're weird, and they got Jimbo.
Right, he just had to be hating it out there. But, I mean, for that amount of money, you can do whatever. You can be as weird as you want if you want to pay me $75 million.
That's right.
But, man, I think it's going to be interesting because I think this is a game that you expect Notre Dame to win.
That's right.
I mean, they're pretty much coming out as we expect that to be a top 10 matchup when Florida State gets to town in South Bend. So this is going to be one that we're going to watch just to kind of see how Notre Dame looks against good competition. It'll be game one under a new coach with some new faces there, but that's still a very talented roster out there at Texas A&M. So it's going to be interesting to see how Notre Dame performs to know, like, but, you know, because we're kind of all in the boat. Like, if Florida State's going to drop a game this year, there's a consensus. Yep. That's probably it. But if, you know, if they go out there and lose to Texas A&M, that might shift your focus. Now, it depends on what happens in week zero against Georgia Tech.
That's right.
But it may shift your focus on what game actually looks like come late fall.
That's right. Yeah, absolutely. And I think Notre Dame, based on what we've seen in last season to this season, some of the transfers come in. If Riley Leonard is healthy, I think, again, like you said, we've all projected that Notre Dame be pretty decent this year, and that this would be the one game that none of us feel super confident picking against them. I think every other game, including the Clemson game, which is at Tallahassee, like it's going to be a hard game, but I feel good picking Florida State in. I feel good still picking Florida State to go to Miami and win. I feel good the Gators coming into Tallahassee and Florida State winning. This is the one game with Florida State going to Notre Dame Stadium that I'm like, I can't get over the hump to pick them yet. But we shall see how they play against Texas A&M and that revamped roster. Even though, yes, they still have a lot of talent there. It's Mike Elko. You know they're going to have a great defense. Yep. But, you know, it remains to be seen about the offense. And so, you know, Notre Dame with Marcus Freeman, they're going to have a decent defense as well. They had a good defense last year. You saw what they did in that game against Ohio State. Had they made some better play calls at the end, they might have won that game, right? There were a couple other games that they also had a chance to be in as well, too. And so I'll be curious to see how that pans out with Notre Dame. And like you said, that's really going to be able to set us up, Florida State fans and media and analysts, to be able to say, okay, this is the barometer by which we can really start to think about Florida State in that Notre Dame game.
Right, and Notre Dame has always kind of had the MO of blowing big games, and now that was under Brian Kelly for the most part, and let's just hope that they blow another one when Florida State comes to town. So a Sunday game before Florida State gets in action, and we'll speed up through this one because it's not really relevant to us anymore. That's USC versus LSU, man. I think that's going to be a pretty cool game to see. It is in Las Vegas, so it's a neutral site game. That's a cool site for that game. You know, USC, man, look, LSU has to find a new quarterback to replace Jaden Daniels. USC has to find a defense. You know, they have not played defense. Lincoln Riley has just never had a defense. And so it's going to be interesting to see. Like, this might be who scores 70 points first. We'll see. But, yeah, man, I think this is going to be a fun game. I mean, it's so cool. Like, I really enjoyed that LSU series that we played. I enjoyed it a lot because we won both games.
That's right.
And we smoked them that last year. But, you know, this is also going to kind of be a little bit of a testament year for both of these coaches.
I mean,
you're looking at Lincoln Riley's now got a couple years under his belt. You've had your guys come through. You had Caleb Williams. You didn't do anything with him.
What do you do without them? Yep.
You know, and then LSU, like, you started hot. You won the SEC West. You made the SEC Championship. Of course, you ran into a juggernaut. No one blames you for losing that one. I mean, nobody beat them. Georgia that year. But then you also look at last year, you had the Heisman winner, and it was kind of a letdown season, especially with the way Alabama played and stuff. So it's I'm not going to say either one of these are going to be on hot seats because I think they put so much into getting these coaches there. Yep. But man, this is going to be like a put up or shut up bowl, so to speak. It's going to be interesting to see who comes out on top in that one.
Yeah, I agree with you. I don't think any of them are on a hot seat. I do think if LSU were to lose this game, the flavor of the LSU family for Brian Kelly is going to go a little bit more sour just because LSU, right?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think a loss for LSU is worse than a loss for USC.
Correct. Yeah, yeah. I think Lincoln Riley has so much rope there. They're just USC is just great to be back in the national limelight again. Yep. But LSU, they expect that they're sick of losing these first week games. I mean, if you think about it, they're 0-2 in the last two week one games because of Florida State. And so to lose a third straight opening game, I think would be hard on that fan base. Now, I don't know about you, but I'm a diehard Florida State fan, will always bleed garnet and gold. But because I lived out in California, you know, you're kind of forced to pick a team to kind of cheer for among your friends there. And I definitely wasn't rooting for some group called the Bruins. So I liked USC. I went to USC games, had season tickets there. It was fun. It was so great to when Lincoln Riley got there to see all the pageantry, to meet Will Ferrell, which I did get to do It was so much fun. So I do have a little love for USC. So I'm hoping they win this game. It'd be nice if they could catch a defense somewhere. It'd be great.
Yeah.
But you know, too, Jesse, and I'll throw this back to you. LSU could catch a defense too. They didn't have one last season.
Yeah, they were pretty rough. Now, they did change coordinators at USC, so hopefully that will help. I know nobody liked that guy. And I mean, man, I don't have a second favorite team. It's Florida State and F everybody else. You know,
yeah, now, I got you.
Maybe like a couple of G5 teams. Like, I have a little liking for Appalachian State because I'm pretty close to them. I'm only about 2 hours from Boone, and I really want to go to a game up there because, you know, it's pretty crazy up there for a G5 school. But, you know, that's going to be a fun – I think those are two fun brands, you know, and that's where Florida State LSU was. I think it's where, like, you may not be where you want to be, but you're back out of the muck. And it's two fun brands, two matchups. So that's cool as well. And then, of course, you know, to tie things up here, we kind of already talked about it, Florida State, Boston College on that Monday night. So, man, you – like, early in the season, you're getting all the spotlight. You get the week zero game, the big week zero game. That's, like, the only really one, I think, between two Power Five schools that matter anyway. And then you also have the game on Monday night. You'll be the only game that night, Labor Day at nighttime. So all eyes are going to be on Florida State. That's going to be just an awesome couple of weeks with jam packed full of football. You know, and then I think one last one that I think is going to, this one's going to sound like, you're going to probably be like, what the fuck are you talking about? Virginia Tech at Vanderbilt. I think
I did see that one. Yes.
That's an underrated game because Vandy is garbage, but Virginia Tech has some high hopes this year, and you know they have a history of kind of struggling to get, like, they lost to Old Dominion a few years ago. You know, they I think they lost to Rutgers or something like that.
Yes,
so it's like,
they did.
If you come out and lose to Vandy, talking about respect for the ACC and perception of the ACC, if I want to say, when I wrote the article about the odds to win the ACC, they're top four, I think. They're like or top five. They're like behind Florida State, Clemson, I think maybe Louisville, Miami. They're right up there because they're returning the most production in college football. If you go on the road and lose to Vanderbilt, I mean, the perception of your program, of the conference, is going to take a massive hit. So that one might not be a headliner game, but it's one that I have my eyes on because I had, like, towards the end of the season when I saw them getting a lot of people back at Virginia Tech, I had kind of started to predict that it's going to be Florida State, Virginia Tech, and Charlotte next year. Louisville did some things in the portal that I think they may have passed Virginia Tech. They also lost half of what they gained.
I was
going to
say,
portal.
They gained and then they lost half of it.
And so, man, I still think, like, Virginia Tech is going to be one of the front runners for making that ACC championship. And, man, if they come out and lose to Vandy, that is an absolute letdown.
Yeah, it would be a catastrophic letdown for the ACC, but also really more so for Virginia Tech. At this point, you'd have to look at that coaching staff and say, okay, it's just not working. I mean, and it was so funny because when Virginia Tech and Miami and all of them came over, Virginia Tech quickly established himself as like, oh, we're going to mean business in this conference.
Right.
And it just has seemed since that time, since what's his name? Beamer retired. It has just not been the same since. So
Fuente, Mike Norvell's predecessor he was an absolute flop there.
Yep.
And there's been some stories that come out where their athletic department was an absolute shambles mess. They were underfunding. Yep. And man, when they hired Brent Pry, you know, I was talking to some Virginia Tech fans that I know and that cover the program. And I'll be honest, man, this is no shade on Virginia Tech because that's one of my favorite fan bases out there.
Mm-hmm.
They're just a great group of people. They're super nice. They support their team through thick and thin. But when they hired Brent Pry, I was like, man, this doesn't scream like we're ready to play football. This is like, oh, you know, a ship stabilizer, so to speak. I mean, I like the guy. He kind of won me over a little bit because, you know, he talked a little smacks, called him the flagship program at ACC Media Day. So I like him. And then they had a good late season. You know, they kind of came on.
Yeah, they did.
The they had a good one. So they need this year. If they're going to dust that program off, they have to have a good year. And this should be it for them. But, man, there would be no bigger black eye on your schedule than dropping a game at Vandy, you know, to start your season. But that's pretty much it for the big week one games that we're going to be watching. Obviously, as things get closer, we'll talk about that as well. Like I said, sometimes we venture off the path a little bit to talk about college football as a whole because, man, we just love the game and we love the sport.
Right.
And I know you guys love the sport too. And so we want to talk about that a little bit. But, Michael, to close the show out here, let's touch on a little bit of round ball sports. Now, we said last week in the last show that it was a bad time for Florida State to kind of hit a slump.
In baseball,
In baseball. Well, they lost a pitch.
They hit the slump.
And that was a low for this team because that was Pitt's first ACC series win of the season.
Yep.
And they also then they backed it up with a loss to Stetson, which I mean, it's midweek things happen.
Stetson is sometimes tricky to get around. Yeah.
Right. And I did read some things where there was some crazy things that happened with the travel schedule with Pitt that maybe threw them off. They did beat Georgia Tech last night. This is their last ACC, their last series of the regular season. So you hope they're playing, if you're watching this on Friday, they're playing a doubleheader today. Hopefully they can get the series win, get one, maybe even a sweep.
Yeah.
If they do get the win and the sweep even, I think they will be able to hang on to one of them top eight seeds. I think they will be able to host a regional. And I think that's really important because when you look at this team, so they are currently 37-13. Again, excuse me, 38-13 because they beat Georgia Tech last night. They are 26-3 at home, but they're 8-10 on the road.
Yeah.
So they play so much better in Dick Howser Stadium. They need to host that regional.
Yes.
They started 19-0, and I understand it had a lot to do with the competition once they hit the thick of the season, but they've been 19-13 since.
Yeah.
So they just, man, they're going to have, like we said, they hit a slump at a bad time.
That's right.
But if they can get some momentum, get this Georgia Tech series win, and then host that regional, you know, looking at some of the teams in there, I think there's like Florida A&M and then another like small team. I think they have a really good chance at who's the early predictions to get out of that regional with a win. But when you just look at the disparity between the home and the road record, man, they got a host.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with you. And the thing is, man, you just don't want this season that's been such a good season.
Yes, yes.
Such a good revitalization, you know, coming off of what they went through last season, man, you want them, you know, what's the old saying? Like if I'm going to go there, I'm going to get me something, right? I'm going to get me something, right? So if they're going to go into the postseason, man, go get you something, go get you an ACC title, go get you a regional. If you're able to host it, go get yourself a super regional, go win something, man. Like you just do not want this season to end in a dud where you lose, you know, this, you know, hopefully they don't lose the Georgia Tech series. They go into the ACC tournament, go as far as you possibly can there, and then see what you can put together in the NCAA tournament for College World Series tournament. See what you can do there. But man, you just don't want the slump to turn into a womp womp, you know,
where you
end the season and you're just like, man, we did all that for nothing.
Right. And at the end of the day, man, this isn't Miami. We don't claim recruiting national
championship.
We do
not.
Like, unless you put hardware, and that's, it's a
and
perfect
rings
example.
On finger.
Right. Like, when you look at the football season last year, like, man, 13-0 to the ACC championship was one of the funnest seasons I've ever experienced as a Florida State fan. It doesn't mean a freaking thing because you didn't. Now, it wasn't your fault.
But.
But because you didn't bring home the hardware, it didn't really matter. It didn't really do anything for you. It ended up being kind of more of a letdown than anything after a 13-win season. So, like you said, you just want to see them be able to capitalize on that early season momentum. Now, the ACC tournament's going to be kind of hard to win. I mean, you got Duke, you got Wake Forest, you got NC State, you got Clemson in there. You have a lot of really good teams. But if you can get this Georgia Tech series win and host a regional, there's no reason you shouldn't be able to go through that and win, especially if you're hosting. So, you know, just good luck to those guys. Hopefully they can capitalize on things. And of course, we'll talk about that next time after the regular season has wrapped up. Last thing we'll touch on here is softball. They are actually getting ready to start playing today.
That's right.
In the regional that they're hosting, they have Chattanooga today. And then they will, looks like they'll play the winner of Auburn and Central Florida. So, you know, they kind of were the opposite. They started a little rough.
And then,
they came on late in the season. They were able to find their rhythm, find their flow.
Yep.
You would think that they should be able to handle Chattanooga pretty easily.
You would think.
And then, you know, and then, but we'll take it one game at a time.
That's right.
And man, you can never count out Lonnie Alameda. So
that's
like,
right.
I will never sell my stock on her as
that's
a coach.
Right.
So you just, as long as you get a fighting chance, I'm going to trust them. You know, you still got Oklahoma out there.
Yeah,
you still got a couple of juggernauts. I'm not expecting them to go out and win a national championship this season, but man, if they could at least bring home an ACC championship or something like that, you still got, you know, or I mean, not the ACC championship, but win your regional.
Yeah, yeah.
And at least get into the Women's College World Series and make some noise, man. I just think that would be good for their confidence after the year that they've had, because this team has so much young talent that going forward, like Jasoni Beachum has won basically every award that you can win
as
a softball player as a freshman. She is absolutely amazing. So, you know, if you can go into next year with some momentum, with all the young talent you have on this team, it can be a really big year for them. So don't ever count them out. But they do get underway today with the regional that they're hosting.
Absolutely. Like, yeah, if they can win this regional because of the, I think they were the 15th seed, national seed, they will, if they win this regional, they will go on to the super regional to face the number two seed, which is Oklahoma. Now, it would be incredible if they could get to the super regional and then somehow find a way to face Oklahoma and defeat them to make it to the College World Series. That'd be awesome. It'd be, I think that would make the season worthwhile because, like you said, they did start a little rough, but then, of course, Lonnie, you know, she gets her girls, she gets that team going. They go on a long win streak. They have a little rough patch, but they get back on it. Man, they had Duke down in the ACC championship 3-0.
Yeah.
Duke comes back, wins that game. So if they can win their regional, they can get to the super regional. They'll probably face they'll be in the Oklahoma super regional if Oklahoma makes it out of their regional as well. You know, then all chips are up and we'll see what happens. But the future of this program, the next couple years are going to be an incredible ride because you saw the talent, you saw the pitching that's coming around, that's getting there. Man, if that talent keeps developing, you know, they go and get a couple more pieces out of the high school and the portal. Woo wee, can't wait.
Yeah, it's going to be back to business as usual. But, you know, I mean, it only takes getting hot for one game. Like, if you face Oklahoma, but you got to be real hot because that's a juggernaut out there.
That's a juggernaut. Back to back to back.
Man, champions. I mean, that's ridiculous. The NCAA, what are you doing? Investigate them. What are we doing here? We need some sanctions to slow them down. So that's going to be pretty much it for today, guys. That's going to round out the show. That's going to be our last one for this week. So we hope you guys enjoyed it. We will be back with you next week for another show. Make sure you check out Alumni Hall FSU. Again, get you some great FSU gear. Summertime, they got new t-shirts, new hats, all that good stuff that you're going to want. Save 10% with code SPEAR. If you guys don't mind, drop a like and subscribe. Leave us a comment. Let us know what you're excited about coming up, what week one matchup you're looking forward to besides the one that Florida State's playing in. So we appreciate you guys tuning in. We'll catch up with you next week. And as always, go Noles.
Go Noles.